Good afternoon again, Costanza.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Sandra.
On behalf of the August Wilson Society and the soon-to-be-launched August Wilson Journal, I'm honored that you granted this interview to add your voice to our inaugural issue of the August Wilson Journal. The August Wilson Journal identifies itself as the first peer-reviewed, open-access, online scholarly journal promoting the study, teaching, and performance of Mr. Wilson's work. The journal invites scholarship on August Wilson, including literary analyses, biographical research, performance studies, historical research, interviews, bibliography, notes, and books, performance reviews. We are so excited about this upcoming spring 2019 debut. My questions today, Costanza, center around August's literary legacy. And, of course, this call is being recorded.
Yes.
As Wilson's wife and current executor of the August Wilson Estate, can you talk about some of the initiatives that you have overseen or have been part of to preserve August's legacy? And I guess on a scale from 1 to 5, and 5 being the highest, how are things going with that?
Oh, my gosh, that's a hard thing. You're asking me to grade myself on my work. Let's see what grade I give myself at the end of this interview. After August's passing in 2005, a lot of people came together and really pulled their forces to have Radio Golf be performed on Broadway, and thus completing all, 10 plays of August to be performed in New York. Those 10 plays being, of course, the American Century Cycle. Then that same wave of energy went into the Kennedy Center readings. And I don't know if you attended that or not, but it was
several of them, yes.
Oh, yeah, yeah. It was what I call is the Wilsonian warriors coming together,
yes.
And
yes.
Celebrating and, at least saying those words and marking them at the stage of the Kennedy Center was amazing. Then we've also had Joe Turner's Come and Gone, Fences, and Jitney Beyond Broadway. For those three plays, I was definitely involved in less of a participatory role than others. We have, as you have already stated, we have published all 10 plays of the American Century Cycle. Many of the productions of August plays, I do spend at least a little time with, thinking who's directing them, who's in them. Several directors have come up, have made a name for themselves directing August Wilson. And that I find fantastic. The most recent is Brandon Dearden, who has been directing his plays at the Two Rivers Theater. There's been a couple of other directors, including Felicia Rashad and a couple others, that I have sort of said, hey, how about directing? And, sort of opened the door to have them say, let me try it. And, and it's very exciting.
Ruben has as well. Yeah.
Yes, Ruben too. So there's, actors that have, also Stephen McKinley Henderson has been, directing. And so actors have sort of, done a little step forward to go, that step that much closer to August's work. And especially since they have been able to be the people who were with him in the room.
That's a good point.
Pass on that kind of wisdom is really, really terrific. And then what else have we done? We've completed I just completed the Herculean feat of compiling all of August's papers into one archive that's being housed at a very state-of-the-art facility here in Seattle area. We have published a book on August's monologues for the August Wilson monologue competition and other purposes for students and professionals. I have been teaching, this is something that is very close to my heart. I have been going to Yale to teach the first years just for a small section of time, but while they are working on an August Wilson project. And the reason I'm doing that is because they are young designers who may not have had an opportunity to design for August Wilson before. And I think that, you know, me sharing with them all of the little details that are important within the text of August Wilson, as opposed to them just, you know, designing something because it's a project, you know, at school or using the same research as everybody else. You know, I really, really have them get in touch with who they are as designers and what they can add to the work. So I've been doing that. And I, of course, was involved with the movie Offenses, and I participated in the national promotional tour. I travel still to many parts of the U.S. and London and the U.K. Representing the estate. What I wanted to also underline was that at this point, you know, it's 13 years later, and a lot of the initiatives, a lot of the projects that I am thinking about are things that are a little bit more removed from, you know, the time after August's passing that all these people came together and rallied for, you know, to say, let's not forget August Wilson. And so now I feel that my mission is a little bit more abstract. You know, there are legacy projects, which I can speak about later. You know, I need people behind me to be able to get, you know, these things off the ground. But, you know, if managing August legacy and estate, I've never run out of ideas. I never think, oh my gosh, what else is there to do with August work? You know, right. It is infinite.
Wonderful. Well, I will venture to give you a grade, Costanza. based upon all that I know you have done and are involved in right now, you will get a 5+.
Oh, Sandra, you're so lovely.
But I want to ask you that I'm sure your classes are waitlisted at Yale.
It's for the graduate students, so they're all there.
Yeah. What is the title of that book you referenced you compiled on monologue?
The title of that book was printed by Samuel French. It's called Dangerous Music, Monologues of August. Yes, Monologues of August.
On Amazon, yeah.
Sure it is, yeah.
Okay, great. I'll take a look at
that.
But thank you so much for that. Over the years, August's critically acclaimed plays have had several names. I've seen several names. They've been called the Pittsburgh Cycle, the August Wilson Century Cycle, and the American Century Cycle. Which name does the estate endorse and why?
Well, just yesterday I wrote on a piece of paper, August Wilson's American Century Cycle. But, you know, truly I am the one who has been really standing 100% behind the name, the American Century Cycle. And I feel very strongly about this because, you know, first of all, any story, you know, of the oppressed, you know, as is existent in August's plays, you know, stories about oppression. Any story about the oppressed is also stories about the oppressor.
Yeah.
And, you know, these are American stories, and these are things that, in, you know, it's an incredible, I wouldn't call it a textbook. It's an incredible canon of work that touches so many pieces of the 20th century. Therefore, you know, in its life in Pittsburgh for those nine plays and life in Chicago for Ma Rainey's Black Bottom, but, you know, that little small town represents all of America. And another reason that I feel strongly about the naming it the American Century Cycle is because, you know, August many times was, you know, read somewhere in an article that he was one of the best African-American playwrights. And, you know, I know that that kind of, you know, sort of got him a little bit because, you know, he really wanted and he aimed to be one of America's best playwrights. And I think that he is. And, you know, his work proves it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Thank you. I'm sure you're constantly bombarded with questions about access to August's work. What goes into your decisions to grant or deny access to Wilson's plays by producers, scholars, or other interested parties? What are some of your criteria?
Well, I don't really have criteria yet. Most of his archive is here in Seattle. I mean, you know, there's little bits like programs and little things, you know, scattered all around the country, I'm sure. But the bulk of it we have here. I granted very limited access to some of August's papers to a gentleman by the name of Lawrence Glasgow, because he's an academic from Pittsburgh, and he's writing a book on August as a young man, about August, you know, as he lived in Pittsburgh, as he lived and grew in Pittsburgh. But I'd like to, first, more than anything, I'd really like to get an official biography together so that we can use a lot of the material. I mean, we have so much rich material to put together that official biography. The papers, I just don't feel like they should be open, especially for people that are writing unauthorized biographies of August Wilson.
I wonder who you have in mind. But, one of the questions also is, in April, of course, we made that announcement. What has transpired since then? Have you begun to organize that effort?
Well, I've been, yes, I have been asking around for somebody to write this book with. It's very difficult. Of course, I wanted to be someone who is an African American, and I'm not saying that there's no African American writers, but what I am saying is that it has to be somebody, you know, just the right person, and so far that person hasn't appeared to me. I have been searching with the help of my estate agent at William Morris, and her name is Susan Weaving. And you know, every time we come up with a possibility or an idea, we pursue it, but it doesn't really lead to you know, just the right person. But I know they are out there. And but at the same time, I am jotting down every day a little bit by little bit, you know, little things that I feel are important for that biography. And so when it is a go, I really want it to be a real go.
Understood. Can you share some of the details about your own professional and background and award-winning work as costume designer?
Oh my gosh.
You did a fabulous presentation in Pittsburgh. It is so interesting because when the conference was over, I'm saying I was on stage, so I didn't get to see a whole presentation. But if you could talk about some of the projects that you're currently involved in and how do you balance your work as mother, estate executor, and costume designer? And is there room for you to put on just one more hat?
Well, there's always room for one more hat, I think. Especially for a costume designer, but
no pun intended.
No pun intended, of course.
Yeah.
My background is very much steeped in the arts. My dad was an artist, or is an artist. He's still alive. I had lots of color and vibrancy around me all the time when I was little. And I always knew that I was going to be an artist of some kind. I studied art. I was going to be an art major, not really knowing what my particular media was going to be. But up until I was in my early 20s, I just knew I was going to be an artist. And I was living in Amsterdam at the time, and I started to see a little bit of theater. And it just sort of, I caught the bug. And I came back to the United States and I just said, I need to work in the collaborative art because I'm a collaborative person. I like to talk about ideas. I like to have a deadline. So that's how I started to study design, and I ended up at the Yale School of Drama, and that's how I met August Wilson. The project that I have designed in the American Century cycle have curiously been the early ones. Not necessarily all of them on Broadway, but I have designed Gem of the Ocean, Ma Rainey, The Piano Lesson, Seven Guitars, Fences, and a very small production of Jitney in New Jersey. Those are the plays of August that I've designed. And it's amazing
which
for
one?
Me. Yeah.
Which do you have a favorite among those that you...
You know, I probably have two favorites. One is The Piano Lesson, because that's the show I was designing when I met August Wilson. And it was so magical for me to hear the inside stories or the inside, the ideas from the inside of the play through August Wilson,
right.
You know, by getting to know him. And then my other favorite is Seven Guitars. It was the first play that he wrote while we were together here in Seattle. And feel that I know all those characters because August would, you know, both quote them and speak about them always while we were here. And it was a very magical journey for me to have gotten to see the play from its very conception to the end. So I think that's why those two are my favorites. But let me see, I have been doing a little less designing recently, and I think it's because I feel so much that my work with the estate and with the legacy of August Wilson is so important, and I feel that there's so much to do. However, next year I will design one show, and that's here in Seattle, so I can stay close to my daughter, because you're right, I am also a mom, and you know, no matter how old your kids get, you always, you know, you're destined for a lifetime of watching over them. Yes, indeed. I think there's, you know, I think another reason why I haven't been designing as much is I do want other hats. And I do, you know, I just want to be involved with producing some of these plays and making decisions that are exciting and fresh. And I also would have been wearing another hat, which is translator for one of August plays. And that is going to, we're having a reading here in Seattle of Joe Turner's Come and Gone in Spanish with Latino actors. And I'm directing that reading.
Oh, wow. Wow.
Speaking of hats.
Translator, oh my goodness. You're quite busy. Yeah, you're doing a wonderful job. Now, I remember in the documentary you were talking about August's idiosyncrasies as a writer, like circling his desk. Can you share any other interesting things, rituals per se? I mean, and also, did he ever ask you to be a sounding board or to proofread or?
Definitely, absolutely. when he, as I was saying, you know, the Seven Guitars was the first play that I, you know, what I call was a baby play. You know, I saw it in its baby play form. And when he showed it to me, it was like, huh, you know, he hadn't put in all his weighty, heavyweight monologues. He hadn't filled it up with the August Wilson muscle that that a lot of those plays have.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought, you know, this is an August Wilson play, you know, ? But I realized immediately right after that, I said, oh, this play has just been born. I get it. You know, it's going to grow and it's going to become you know, one of the masterpieces in August canon, and it did.
You felt that early on, huh?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
It was his, let's see, it was his sixth play, or fifth play, I can't remember. It was the fifth or the sixth play. So I had already seen Fences, I had already seen The Piano Lesson. I had already seen Joe Turner's Come and Gone and Jimmy. So I knew it was going to get to that level.
Great. Great.
Another one of his things that he did was, I don't know if I spoke about it in the documentary, but he worked really late into the night and into the early early hours of the morning. So it was always, you know, while I was sleeping.
Yeah.
And, you know, so, like, I would wake up and I would see a whole bunch more, you know, like a monologue written, two monologues written, another twisting story. I would see that and I would say, when did you do that? You know, it was almost, like, seamless.
The muses come out at night.
The muses came out at night,
yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah.
And another thing that he did was he you know, when he finished a play, he would clutch it really close to him, you know, as though it were this precious child that he had just given birth to. And I think he also knew you know, being a writer, I mean, everything springs from the writer.
Yeah.
He also knew once that anybody else read it, it was going to become the property also of other people. Like, you know, this is going to become the work of the director. This is going to become the work of the actors. This is going to become the work of the designers, even the ushers, you know. So that's, you know, he sort of protected it from a little while, and he would carry it around with him.
Oh, that is precious. I've not heard that. That I can understand it as well.
Yes.
But,
yes.
You know, many people seem surprised that in addition to writing poetry and plays, August experiment with other genres. Can you talk about some of these little-known writing projects, and do you have any access to any of these forays into other genres?
Yeah. I mean, we have everything.
Uh-huh.
I think that what you mean is maybe early on in his career, he wrote museum plays.
Yeah.
For the Museum of Science, the Science Museum in Minneapolis. And he had these, you know, little vignettes, and those are really precious. He, of course, also had did some drawings. His drawings were mostly done with pastels because he loved that medium, and he was a very prolific drawer. He mainly drew characters and people that were very distinct. And I always thought he was drawing people from his plays, people from the world of his plays. He didn't necessarily draw one character, but people from the world of the plays. And then he also wrote some short stories while I was with him here in Seattle for a charity called Bedtime Stories. I don't know if you know about that.
No.
They were, it was for several different writers that were local. They would all get together and read these bedtime stories that had certain themes. And his friend Charles Johnson got him involved in that. And it was called Bedtime Stories, and it was a charity for adult literacy.
No, I hadn't heard about that.
Yeah.
I had heard about the four-minute plays for the Dramatists Guild, but I'd not heard of this.
Right, right.
Bedtime Stories.
Bedtime Stories, yes. They still do it, but of course we're not involved in it anymore.
Okay, all righty. Amos often shared that he had not read, and in some instances chose not to read, certain canonical texts. Hansberry's Raisin, Miller's. What do you think was behind this admission?
Well, you know, anything that I say will just be theoretical, I suppose. But I think that a lot of people, you know, after he wrote and after it opened on Broadway, you know, after he wrote and presented Fences, he was asked many times the question of, you know, did you, when you were growing up in the Pittsburgh Hill District, did you see an old guy, you know, playing an old trumpet? Or, you know, they would not give him the credit for his incredible imagination and his incredible story writing skills. And, you know, that got under his skin for sure. You know, it was important for him to say, no, I have not read Death of a Salesman or Raisin in the Sun, because, you know, the census comes, yes, it comes from that same mythological, epic style of telling a man's life, but it is so, you know, it is so different. It's so different a story. It's a story of African Americans and how they deal with the American dream.
Right. Right.
And, you know, all of those stories, Raisin in the Sun, Tetsuo Salesman, and Fences are about the American dream, but told from totally different points of view. And so I think that it was important for August to say, you know, I have an imagination. I have the power of invention.
Yeah.
The same, and, you know, all men stand equal in front of a white piece of paper.
Wow. I'm writing that down, even if that's great. That's
I just
great.
Thought of it.
But did you really? but he also admitted to having read or having seen performances of Afro Fugard, Sizzly Bunzi's Dead, and Philip Hayes Dean's Stab the Blind Pig, and Ed Bullen's. There were some works that he proudly admitted to having seen. But I guess he was
read and seen. Yeah, I think that, you know, he's also saying, of course I do read. Of course I am current on what is happening in American theater.
Yeah.
I dragged him to almost everything I designed, you know, and he saw a production of that I designed.
You're using the word drag, Constanza. What do you mean?
Well, many times he probably didn't really want to go, but I made him.
Okay.
And for example, I designed a wonderful production of Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf.
Yes.
And he loved it. He loved it, but he had never read it before.
Oh.
The same goes for Richard II and,
mm-hmm.
you know, a lot of other Shakespearean plays that we saw at Oregon Shakespeare Festival. You know, it was a little bit of a dragged into, but once we were sitting down, we very much enjoyed it.
Great, great, great. You referenced earlier that you had completed the process of sorting through August's material and boxing them up.
Yeah.
So without jeopardizing any negotiations that may be underway, can you give us an update on where the papers may find a home?
Well, I cannot give you an exact place. All I can say is that there are interested parties that would love to have the papers. My biggest and most important priorities in that are that they treat the material with the utmost respect and the utmost care. And, of course, that it be somewhere where people can get access to the papers in a very easy way. And so I also want his material to be treated on the same level as all of the most important playwrights of the 20th century, such as Tennessee Williams, Arthur Miller, Eugene O'Neill. They, you know, his name is spoken in the same breath. So I want it to be garnered and won with that same amount of respect.
Exactly, exactly. The HBO project that was written and touted widely about a year or so ago, where does that stand now? There was the idea, I believe, of bringing the plays, the American Century Cycle, to film?
Yes, that was on the wake of the excitement around Fences. We all know that Denzel Washington is a great admirer of August's work. And, you know, it's wonderful. I mean, we have an incredible champion of, you know, the world of movies and stage. behind the name August Wilson. So I know that that the excitement and enthusiasm hasn't diminished for Denzel Washington. It's just that we haven't yet carved out the exact time to make those works be filmed for HBO. Another thing is that there was a lot of talk about all 10, but the idea was more or less, let's start with a couple, and then we'll see how these works are received, how they are filmed, how they are treated. I know that not all of the plays will lend themselves to the same kind of film. You know, they're all a different, I consider each of them a different jewel in the crown of August Wilson. So, you know, a play, let's say Gem of the Ocean, is epic. You know, I see grand landscapes in this film, whereas, you know, Jitney is a little smaller. So to be talking about HBO and all 10, I don't think it's realistic, but
right.
I'm hoping that we can get some of those plays be in the hands of the most talented African Americans in this country.
Right, right. We were waiting with bated breath. That Ma Rainey would be next. Did August ever talk to you or mention anything about scholarship? I know he talked in his speech, The Ground on Which I Stand. He talked about critics.
Oh yeah.
He said that you know that critics need to evolve. As the playwrights come up with new works, the critics had a responsibility of evolving in terms of their education to be able to write about those works. How important was that to him, as far as you can recall?
Well, what I can say is that August had a tremendous amount of respect for all critics. And you know, critics, I mean, a few names that come to mind are, you know, Ben Brantley, Frank Rich, Michael Feingold from The Village Voice. You know, I remember him reading all those articles, all those reviews, shall I say, very carefully. And he would, you know, take a lot of things in mind, a lot of the criticism in mind for going from one stage of the development to the other. But I think what he meant in his speech is more of a sense of the power that a critic has in terms of deciding what it is that is out there in the ether, what people see, what people are going to experience. Therefore, I think African American work is going to have a different narrative, a different aesthetic, a different style of telling a story. You know, a lot of critics would say, oh, you know, these plays are so wordy. You know, it's just so many words. And yet those same critics will sit through several hours of Tony Kushner's Angels in America, or several hours of many Shakespeare plays. So, you know, it is a different way of telling a story, and you cannot judge all works with the same aesthetic and the same sense of what is art.
He was aware that scholars were onto his work as well. So I'm wondering, in addition
definitely.
Was he concerned about the growth of scholarship on his plays?
Oh, I think that absolutely. I think that he loved nothing more than to sit down and talk to other writers. You know, people such as yourself, Peter Wolf, Joan Fishman, Alan Maydell, Harry,
yeah.
Harry, that was my next name, Harry
yeah.
Elam. All taking his work so seriously as to, you know, to spend time reading it, writing about it, finding other meanings, finding where it fits in the cosmology of our existence was very exciting to him. And, you know, hopefully there'll be many, many more.
Absolutely. I remember early on when I was writing on him, I would share some of my early ideas, and you know, as a beginning scholar, I was looking for him to say, "Wow, that's great." He'd always say, "Well, you know what? I never thought of it that way." And I was wondering whether he probably said that to everybody. Well, I never really that's another way to look at it. I've never thought of it that way, but he seemed very receptive.
Very open. Very open.
Yes. Okay. So I really enjoyed visiting the August Wilson House last April during that major press briefing, if you can recall, in the backyard there.
Of course.
How are the I think that was to celebrate the final phase of renovation. Can you talk about the status of the August Wilson House now, and what's the overall vision for it?
Well, you know, I think a few people think that the estate and the August Wilson House are one body.
Okay.
But they are actually two separate entities. However, I love the idea, and I love the support that the August Wilson House has gotten, and I'm 100% behind its mission, you know, which is to bring culture and study and art into the Hill District of Pittsburgh. And to also be aware of the August Wilson history and presence in Pittsburgh. So I love everything that they're doing, and I am so joyous for the support that they have received. And it looks like, you know, it will be open and running for many years to come. So I love that.
Yes. So Pittsburgh seems to be having a renaissance in terms of August Wilson, his legacy, and I'm thinking of the August Wilson Center as well. What are your thoughts about that institution?
Oh, gosh, I'm just so thrilled. Yeah, I'm going to be involved in their gala next year, and in the programs that they put together, you know, there's jazz festivals, there is a blues festival, film festival, and all of the beautiful art. I saw pictures of a recent exhibit of art that they have in their galleries. It's really a top-notch institution in the city of Pittsburgh, and I think that it's going to make a big name for itself. Because I don't know if there are many other institutions like it, you know, for a cultural center for all African American arts. And I'm just thrilled with the person who's running the center, whose name is Janice Burley Wilson. Yes.
Yeah.
So, yeah, Pittsburgh is going through a renaissance.
Phenomenal, phenomenal job.
Yes, she is.
In a 2016 interview with TCG's American Theater, you said that you are really focusing on reimagining, re-envisioning a new chapter for the American Century Cycle. Can you share with us your vision for this new chapter?
Right here on my phone, I have my mission statement, which I know you have also, but I'm going to pull it up. I think that August Wilson's plays still say as much about today as they did when they were written.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that we need more August Wilson in this social climate rather than less. I happen to believe that, and I know that you do too, because
of
this journal that you're putting together. It is the list that you read me of all the things that you would like to have shared and published and exchanged. I think that is fantastic. So because we need August Wilson now more than ever, I would really love it if new and younger artists were to tackle his plays with what is happening today in mind. And I'm not sure what I mean, and it's part of what I'm trying to do also with the designers at Yale that I will be working with, is what is it that we can see so that the same production with the same kind of set design style or acting style that we've seen before is, something to build on. I mean, I'm not saying scrap it, but let's build from that point forward. So that it stays current in the American theater. Yeah, so that's what I'm trying to do. And if you wanted to publish the mission statement along with my answer for this question, that would be great.
Duly noted. We'll definitely do that. Well, Costanza, is there anything else that you'd like to add? Maybe a question that I didn't get to, although this list is pretty thorough. But there may be anything.
It is very thorough. But
if there's anything
I thought. One of your questions was really so poignant. I really liked it. And what kind of recognition do I think August Wilson deserves? And I of course think that my husband deserves the world. But as a theater artist, as the executor of the August Wilson estate, and as someone who thinks about August plays a lot, I think that as I said before, I think he deserves the best talent, the best funding, the best production values that this country has to offer, alongside with, all of the other greats that have been produced. And that goes for theater and film. And I think that he also deserves to be continued to be taught and to be read by, students of all, in any stage of their education. I think that anytime August Wilson is read by a young person, he or she will have something said to them, something very important. I also really feel that training for actors needs to be on the same level as, let's say, there are some actors that train as Shakespearean actors. I think that actors should be trained as Wilsonian actors. People such as Stephen McKinley Henderson and people who have been taught by him, I think that
fountain of wisdom needs to be brought into the present for those actors. You know, I sometimes see Stephen and I just think, oh, if I could only just get everything that's inside him.
Oh, wow.
Because he is such a master,
yes,
master teacher and actor. And, you know, because August said all art is political, I think,
yes,
you know, again, all of his work still has something to say to us. So because I believe in the great power of theater and its ability to transform, you know, all people, I really feel that he deserves to be performed in, I've already said this, but I'm going to say it again, in with the most talented people and the best production values of this country. And you know, people, when I go to London, they say, oh, August Wilson, he's your American Shakespeare. So that's how I think he, I think that's what he deserves.
Absolutely. Yes. Absolutely. Well, Costanza, thank you so very much for your generous time. Thank you for your ideas. And I want to assure you that the August Wilson Journal is right on point in terms of preserving, promoting, teaching, sustaining August's legacy. Thank you so very much. Happy holidays to you and your family.
Thanks, okay? The same to you and Michael, and happy holidays, one and all.
Thank you so much.
All right.
Bye-bye.
You're welcome.
Take care. Thank you, Costanza.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.